When she undressed, she discovered that her dress was inexplicably torn in several areas. Her activities on September 19 couldn't possibly have resulted in the extensive damage. There was a 2-inch tear in the stitching at the top of her zipper and a 1-inch tear in the thick zipper fabric. The lining was torn from waist to hemline and the hem was torn down on the same side. Knowing that it needed to be repaired, she placed it in her closet. When she finally removed it, she discovered that it was partially coated in a pink powdery substance. This pink powder had saturated the areas of the dress where Betty stated her alien escorts touched it. She hung it on her clothesline and the powder blew away, but the dress had been reduced to a rag. It was stained pink and the fiber was degraded. The lining is torn from waist to hemline. In 1977, Betty found a UFO investigator, Leonard Stringfield, who took an interest in her damaged dress. He arranged to have it analyzed by the chemistry department at the University of Cincinnati. Sulfur, sodium, chlorides, and silicon were possible trace elements on the dress, and it appeared to be high in undetermined organic hydrocarbons. The pink powder was strange in relation to the inorganic elemental content. Several chemicals were applied to the blue section of the dress in an attempt to duplicate the color change, but none were successful. Phyllis Buyer, Ms., an analytical industrial chemist, conducted an extensive analysis on Betty's dress. She observed that the pink stains were most prominent in the areas that Betty said were touched by her non-human captors, around the arms and at the top of the zipper. She concluded that the stained areas were coated with a biological material of mostly protein and a small amount of natural oil. The protein attacked the fiber and dye in the stained areas and broke down the fiber structure. It came from an external source, not Betty. She concluded that the chemical analysis supports Betty's statements about her dress. The debunker disagreed. He stated, "I would expect that an item of clothing left undisturbed in a closet for 40 years would pick up all manner of interesting biological substances from insects, spiders, mites, mold, bacteria, etc. The truth is that the chemical analysis noted dust and trace environmental elements on Betty's dress, but they did not account for the perplexing findings made by several laboratories. In addition to this, the chemist ran additional tests on a control sample, a dress nearly identical in description to Betty's that had been hanging in a closet for 35 years. It displayed none of the unusual properties of Betty's dress. Invalid speculation about the outer limits show Bifrost Man. Yet another debunker has attempted to demolish the Hills UFO close encounter and abduction by suggesting that Barney had merely described an alien that he watched on television, the Bellaro Shield on the sci-fi horror show The Outer Limits. The show aired in February 1964, 12 days before Dr. Simon asked Barney, under hypnosis, to describe the figures that he observed aboard the UFO. The debunker apparently hadn't read Barney's September and October 1961 descriptions of the non-human entities. They were dressed in shiny black uniforms, just the opposite of the silvery white uniform worn by the Bifrost Man in the Bellaro Shield. Although a mental block occurred when he attempted to remember the facial characteristics of the non-human figure standing in the window, he noted the expressionless face of the leader and the smiling face of the occupant who looked over his shoulder from a control panel. The debunker was so convinced that his assumption was correct that he didn't bother to ask Betty if Barney had watched the show. Barney was deceased when the article was written. She told several researchers that Barney couldn't possibly have watched the show, as he had no interest in that type of program, nor had she ever viewed it. He was usually busy at that time of night attending community meetings and visiting with friends and family before he left for his night job in Boston. I was very curious about this all-edged similarity, so I did my own comparison based upon Barney's written descriptive details. In the end, I found very little similarity between the two. I studied the facial characteristics of the original Bifrost Man's mask and the newer version that is frequently displayed on the internet. His most prominent facial features are slanted eyes that extend to the temples, a highly visible curved ridge above the mouth, and a strong chin. Let's compare these features to the alien figure that Barney described. We can see the large eyes that Barney described to Dr. Simon as slanted but not like the Chinese. The comparison ends there. There is a marked difference between the Bifrost man's eyes and those of the non-human that Barney observed. Barney did not describe the deep eye folds extending upwards from a small human eye, like the ones visible on the Bifrost man's mask. The being he observed had eyes that might indicate peripheral vision, more like cat's eyes than human eyes inside a fold. In addition to this, the Bifrost man's eyes blinked, but Barney did not observe eyes that blinked. The Bifrost man. Note the Bifrost man's deep-set eyes and height. David Baker's forensic painting. Barney's sketch, the prominent ridge above the Bifrost man's mouth is a highly visible feature. Significantly, it is completely absent in Barney's sketches, David Baker's paintings, and Barney's written descriptions of the ET. If Barney had observed the Bifrost man, why would he fail to mention or sketch one of his most prominent features? The Bifrost man's strong, square chin juts out as a highly visible feature. One would expect to find a prominent chin mentioned in Barney's description. Yet he consistently stated that the ETs had weak chins. The Bifrost man spoke with a mouth that had all of the characteristics of a human mouth. Its lips and teeth are visible when it speaks. Not so of the ET that Barney observed. He had a lipless slit for a mouth and no visible teeth. Barney also mentioned immobility of the mouth muscle and a membrane inside the ET's mouth that fluttered. Not so for the Bifrost man. Although the Bifrost man couldn't understand English, he interpreted the Bellaro family's spoken messages by decoding their language through eye contact. This was not part of Barney's perception. There was no spoken English. Communication was probably telepathic, as he and Betty understood the ETs in English, but did not observe the mouth movement that occurs when words are formed. There is no evidence that the ETs read Barney's eyes. Barney's statement to Dr. Simon gives us insight into the communication process that he experienced. He said, he did not speak by words. I was told what to do by his thoughts making my thoughts understand. And I could hear him and I could not understand, and yet I could understand him. Betty stated, I just knew what they were saying. What they wanted me to know. Dr. Simon asked if they transferred their thoughts to her and she replied, somehow or other. I don't know how. The Bifrost man had a normal human torso and stood nearly as tall as Mr. Bellaro. Not so of Barney's ETs. He described spindly legs holding up a bulky, barrel-chested torso. These thin legs carried the ETs along in what Barney described as a rolling gait. Not so for the Bifrost man. The ET's head was larger in proportion to its body than with humans. And it stood only 4.5 to 5 feet tall, at least 8 inches shorter than Barney. David Baker's paintings incorrectly depict beings with thick legs. He wrote that he was guided by his knowledge of human anatomy. ET anatomy is obviously not human. The Bifrost man's gentle speech and radiant presence gave the perception that he was far less monstrous than Mrs. Bellaro, who was willing to kill for his impenetrable shield. Barney perceived the ETs he encountered as terrifying and in complete control. It sounds to me like the Bellaro shield explanation is another anything but ET hypothesis. False statements about Betty's dreams. Debunkers have placed an inordinate amount of significance on 5 vivid dreams that Betty had prior to waking, stating that her dreams were identical to her recall through hypnosis and that Barney had merely absorbed the information in Betty's dreams and fantasized an abduction event of his own. This is touted because Dr. Simon hypothesized that although it is impossible to know for certain, the dream hypothesis was the most logical prosaic explanation. He believed in the Hill's honesty, but he wasn't prepared to go down in history as the psychiatrist that announced to the world that UFOs are real and aliens are abducting American citizens. Remember, no other case of alien abduction had ever been reported. Also, Dr. Simon had an outstanding reputation to protect. He sent a letter to John Fuller that was written to him by a colleague chiding him about his involvement in an alien abduction case. There was pressure from colleagues to separate himself from the case or suffer the consequences. Betty's infamous dreams began 10 days after her UFO encounter and told of being taken aboard a landed craft and undergoing a medical examination. She and Barney had been met, she wrote, by a group of men who surrounded their parked car. The men were human in appearance with black hair, large noses, bluish lips, ears, etc. They stood 5.5 feet tall and wore blue military cadet uniforms and blue cadet's hats. Not so of the non-human entities that she remembered encountering after her memory had been enhanced through hypnosis. Alien in Betty's dreams. Several debunkers have stated that Betty and Barney were plagued by dreams and nightmares about alien abduction before they saw Dr. Simon. This is false. Betty had 5 dreams and only 5 dreams before she began her hypnosis session with Dr. Simon. Barney hadn't dreamed of UFOs until he saw Dr. Simon in 1964. He had 3 dreams following a hypnosis session and told Dr. Simon, "I dreamed about a UFO Tuesday night and Wednesday night. And this is the first time in my life I had ever dreamed about a UFO. I sometimes wonder if debunkers can get anything straight." One debunker wrote authoritatively that Betty had written and rewritten accounts of her dreams during a 2-year period prior to hypnosis. This is false. The truth is she made notes about them on notepaper in early October 1961 and rearranged them into a detailed typed account in November 1961. Several debunkers have stated that Betty told and retold her dreams to Barney and others interested in hearing about her UFO experience. One alleged that she had probably told the story over and over again until Barney's ears fell off, inferring that Barney knew all the details of Betty's dreams and repeated them under hypnosis. According to Barney, this statement is false. The fact is that Barney told Dr. Simon he'd overheard Betty tell her dreams to NICAP investigator Walter Webb while he waited in an adjacent room, but he hadn't heard all the details of her dreams and reassured her that they were only dreams, with no foundation in reality. Debunkers argue that Betty had told him a great many details of the dreams. But they fail to mention what those details are. Barney told Dr. Simon specifically what Betty told him. "But I suppose that this accurate information would demolish their dream hypothesis, so it is best left out of their arguments." Here are the details in Barney's own words. 1. She would say that she had had a dream and the dream was that she had been taken aboard a UFO. 2. She did not tell me about being stopped by the men. She did not have this in her dreams. This was only when I was hypnotized. 3. I was also in her dream and was taken aboard. 4. She was not certain to the location where we had stopped. 5. She had gone into this UFO and had talked with the people there on board. 6. She was told she would forget, and she said that she was determined that she would not forget. 7. She would tell Walter Webb that they had stuck something in her navel causing great pain and that, with just a wave of the hand, this pain disappeared. 8. They had come into a room with my teeth and they were quite startled that her teeth could not come out and mine could. And this is all she knew about me. 9. I never believed her dreams. Dr. Simon used suggestion in an attempt to elicit a response from Barney that Betty had told him about her physical examination when he stated, "Well now, all of this about your being taken aboard the UFO and being examined and having your teeth taken and all the examination. This was all told to you by Betty, wasn't it?" Barney replied, "No. Betty never told me. Only about my teeth." It is interesting that the one thing he did know was not part of his memory under hypnosis. My comparative analysis of the Hill's independent statements to Dr. Simon versus Betty's dream account uncovered significant differences between Betty's dreams and the information recalled separately by Betty and Barney during hypnotic regression. Their statements about the capture interlocked, but were different than Betty's dream account. Barney had independent memories of being floated aboard the craft where only his toes bumped along the rocky ground. The ETs were entirely different than those in Betty's dreams. Betty's exam was more detailed than Barney's, but he sensed each procedure as it occurred with his eyes closed. He and Betty gave independent details about the ET's behavior and communication style that meshed. He also stated that he was returned to the car first and Betty came down the path a short time later. This is consistent with Betty's recall under hypnosis, but different than Betty's dream account. For details, see www.kathleenmarden.com. Dreams or Recall? The Souvenir Book. After Betty's examination, she was offered a souvenir book by the leader that she wanted as proof that her abduction was real. It was not a typical book. It had a stiff, thin cover and a page on the interior that had alien symbols embedded in what resembled shiny plastic. This book was part of Betty's dream account and was dismissed by many as a figment of her imagination. I asked Betty to draw the symbols and kept her sketch in my files for many years. They were published in Captured: The Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience in 2007. Don C. Dondery, PhD, saw them in my book and decided to compare them to the symbols that Bud Hopkins had collected over a number of years from abductees. Dr. Dondery taught psychology at McGill University in Montreal for 47 years and also served as Associate Dean of the Faculty of Graduate Studies and Research. He spearheaded an alien symbol study with the late Stuart Tabell, PhD, from the State University of NY at Brockport and Bud Hopkins. The symbols that Bud Hopkins collected were compared to symbols sketched by two control groups that participated in the study. He issued a statement that Betty's symbols look remarkably like the symbols in Bud Hopkins' collection. This is yet another piece of scientific evidence that Betty and Barney Hill were abducted by non-human entities in New Hampshire's White Mountains on September 19 and into the early morning hours of the 20th in 1961. In this case, we cannot present one piece of evidence that will convince the skeptics that a real abduction occurred. It is the preponderance of evidence that makes this case convincing and has changed the minds of many open-minded skeptics. As is often the case with debunkers or hardcore skeptics, no amount of evidence will convince them that alien abduction is real. They will continue to tout isolated statements that mislead, or invent creative and often false evidence that supports their debunking agenda. This brand of dishonesty will lead us no closer to the truth, but will blur the lines and dissuade the naive public from taking alien abduction seriously. Written by Kathleen Marden, 2013.